our study in 1 Samuel, we're continuing to talk about the demise, I guess would be a good word, of King Saul, his plummet to unfaithfulness, and the things that lead about to his death. We've noted in our study that the people have asked for a king in 1 Samuel chapter 8, and that was in accordance with what Moses told them they would do in Deuteronomy chapter 17. He told them the kind of king that they were to have and the things that that king was to do. And indeed, approximately how many years down the pike from the time of Moses till the time of Samuel are we talking about till they ask for a king? About 400 years or so down the pike. We know the period of the judges lasted how long? 300 years. And how many judges were there? 15 judges, and so this was before the days of the judges, before the conquering of the land under the leadership of Joshua, that Moses had told them that the time would come when you will ask for a king. And now in 1 Samuel chapter 8, and by the way, who's the last of the judges? Samuel is. They've asked for a king, and Saul, son of Kish, a Benjamite, is appointed to be their first king. We know that Saul was very humble when he first became a king, but he became very arrogant, lifted up with pride, and that was one of the very things that Moses said that their kings were not to do. As you'll read in Deuteronomy, the 17th chapter, we note that in 1 Samuel chapter 13, what was evidence of Saul's arrogance? 1 Samuel chapter 13, what did he do? He didn't wait for Samuel. He presumed the prerogative of being priest and offered a sacrifice in preparation, he thought, for the battle in which he was to engage with the Philistines. We know that Saul's army was about 3,000 men, and he faced the opposing army, the Philistines, and about how many did they have? Well, that's right, the sand of the sea. It says in verse 5 of chapter 13, 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen. And what was happening to Saul's army? They were deserting. That's right, swarming. And so he said that he forced himself to offer the sacrifice. We know then in chapter 15 what became further evidence of Saul's arrogance. What did he do? Chapter 15. Pardon me? Okay, that's in chapter 14, but in chapter 15, he was instructed to go and kill all the Amalekites, and he didn't do it. He brought back the best of the Amalekites, and Samuel rebuked him and compared what he did to rebellion, or said it was rebellion, that it was as the sin of rebellion. It was stubbornness, and Samuel rebuked him. And then as we come into the 17th chapter, we know that the Philistines intimidate Saul's army with the giant Goliath. And who then volunteers to fight Goliath? David does. And here is where we learn of the beginning, really, of the conflict between David and Saul. We know that Saul, it was said, has slain his thousands, and David has slain his 10,000s. Of course, that did not go over well with Saul. He became jealous of David and sought from that point to kill David. How was it that Saul at first intended for David to die? He appointed him to a particular office. What was it? Made him captain. And what position was that? How many men did he have over him or have under him? 1,000. A captain was over 1,000. Men. And so Saul thought that in battle with the Philistines that surely David would be killed by the Philistines. Well, that didn't work. We know that Saul had promised unto David his daughter. He refused to give her to David. And then we learn that Saul's other daughter, Michal, loved David. And Saul sought to use that as opportunity against David. how that he might be killed. But we learn that Michael eventually allowed Saul to escape, and this was the beginning, David to escape, and this was the beginning of Saul's pursuit of David with intense desire to kill him. David first fled to Ramah, and then we note that from Ramah he came to Nob, where Abimelech and the priest were. And Abimelech and the priest supplied David with what? Food and a weapon. And then David came to the king of Gath, Achish, among the Philistines, thinking that he would find safety there. And how did Achish react to David's presence? Well, that's true, and David responded how? He acted like a crazy man. Well, David then left and went to the cave of Adullam. He moved his family to Mizpah of Moab, this is chapter 22, for their protection, and then he came back to Nob. All right. Well, he's already been at Nob. He came back from Moab to Keilah. And what did he find among the folks in Keilah? Of course, we've talked about Doeg and how that Doeg slew the priest when Saul arrived there, killed 85 of the priest. But David then went to Keilah, and the Philistines were going to fight against those of the city of Keilah. And David then fought against the Philistines.
And then he finds that Saul is in hot pursuit, and he beseeches the Lord. And he asks the Lord, will those of Keilah, will they betray me, or will they defend me? What did the Lord tell him? They'll betray me. That's right. So then David fled to the wilderness of Ziph. And the people of Ziph, were they willing to defend him or betray him? Betray him. That's right. Last little bit of this chapter, chapter 23. And then as we come to the end of chapter 23, we have David down in the wilderness of Maon, down in the area of the Arabah, and Saul, in pursuit of David, finds out that the Philistines are once again on the rampage, and so he goes to fight with the Philistines and leaves off fighting against David. David then travels to En-Gedi. Now, in our last study, we talked about some events that occurred in En-Gedi. Saul resumes his pursuit of David. And as he goes to En-Gedi, what does David do? Now this is chapter 24. He does, which indicates that he had opportunity to kill him, but he spared King Saul's life. Why did he do that?
He was the Lord's anointed.
That's right. He's God's anointed. He was not going to kill the king. When Saul finds out what David has done, that he has spared David's life. I'm sorry, Saul's life. He has spared Saul's life. Saul then says in verse 20, "And now, behold, I know that thou shalt surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in thy hand. Swear now, therefore, unto me by Jehovah, that thou wilt not cut off my seed after me, and that thou wilt not destroy my name out of my father's house." David swore unto Saul, and Saul went home. But David and his men got up unto the stronghold. Now, this becomes important. We know that Saul knew that the kingdom had been taken from him. Samuel had told him that. And we know that Jonathan was well aware of that as well, Saul's son, that the kingdom was removed from Saul's house. And David is now told that by Saul himself. Later that becomes important when we talk about Mephibosheth, who was Jonathan's son, and how that David later took care of Mephibosheth the rest of his life. We noted that he was injured in one of these encounters with the Philistines. Chapter 25, we introduced in our study last time. We really wasn't through with that. And that's where we want to begin our study this morning and talk a little bit more about Nabal and Abigail. We know in chapter 25 that those who are traveling with David, we describe them as a bunch of hooligans, as these are about how many men?
600.
About 600 men that have joined David. And he sends word to those who are shearing sheep for Naboth that they need nourishment, some provisions. And Nabal learns of that, and how does he respond to the request of David? Maggie, I see it. It's written all over your face. How does he respond? He's not going to have it, is he? Okay? She's got the answer back there. The idea is that Nabal says, well, I don't know who you are. I don't know who your servants are. You may be a bunch of hooligans. You may come in to rob me. And so consequently, I'm not going to give you anything. Now, that's a very loose paraphrase. That's what it says. Okay? And so how did David respond to that? I'm going to kill him. Now, that's another very loose paraphrase, but that's the idea. And Nabal's wife, Abigail, she prepares in verse 18. It says, 200 loaves and 2 bottles of wine and 5 sheep ready dressed and 5 measures of parched grain and 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs and laid them on 2 asses. And she takes them to David and she explains to David that her husband is what? He's a fool. He's a fool. And so consequently, don't avenge yourself upon my husband. Everybody knows that he's a worthless fellow, verse 25. He's a fool. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, thy handmaid, saw not the young men of my Lord whom thou didst send. Now therefore, my Lord, as Jehovah liveth, and as thy soul liveth, seeing Jehovah hath withholden thee from blood guiltiness and from avenging thyself with thine own hand, now therefore let thine enemies and them that seek evil to my Lord be as Nabal. Well, we know that Nabal has established himself with no credibility. Even his own wife recognizes him as a fool. Even his servants recognize him as a fool. And it's Abigail's desire that David not engage in self-vengeance. Now, we commented briefly in our last study Wednesday night about that. We noted earlier that that was one of Saul's motivations, to be avenged of his enemies himself. And David, by the words of Abigail, is prevented from doing that. What happens to Nabal? Nabal dies, that's right. If you'll note in verse 20 or verse 37 and 38, the text tells us, and it came to pass in the morning when the wine was gone out of him, gone out of Nabal, that his wife told him these things, and his heart died within him, and he became as a stone. And it came to pass about 10 days after that Jehovah smote Nabal so that he died. When David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, blessed be Jehovah that hath pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal and hath kept back his servant from evil, and the evil doing of Nabal hath Jehovah returned upon his own head. And David sent and spake concerning Abigail to take her to him to wife. Now, last time I asked you to be sure and count the number of wives that David has. We're going to want to be sure we remember this event when we come to David and Bathsheba. And I'll just give you a heads up. The reason why we're looking at that so carefully is there are those who say, well, David was allowed to keep Bathsheba, And because David was allowed to keep Bathsheba, it really doesn't matter the issue of marriage, divorce, and remarriage. A man can just keep whatever wife he's with. I want you to remember that Bathsheba was not David's first wife. And if we can count wives with David, we can count wives today. That doesn't justify the practice of adultery. We're going to talk about that when we get over there too fast. So just be heads up on that. David married Abigail. He also married Ahinoam in verse 43. David had also married Michal, Saul's daughter. But Saul has given her Halfi to become his wife. And what does David do about that? I want us to go back, if you will, now and do some more work beginning here in chapter 25, verse 43, and we'll pursue onward into chapter 26. In verse 43 of this text, it says, David also took Ahinoam of Jezreel, and they became both of them his wives. And Saul had given Michal, his daughter, David's wife, to Paltai, the son of Laish, who was of Galilee. Now, that ends chapter 25. And we note as it ends, Saul, or David rather, already has multiple wives. And we haven't even got to Bathsheba. So we'll remember that as we said. Now, in 1 Samuel chapter 26, we resume the plight of Saul as he pursues David's life. In chapter 26, I need a reader. Beginning in verse 1 through verse 5. Richard, would you mind reading that for me, please?
Say it again, 1 through what?
1 through 5.
1 Samuel 26, 1 through 5. And the Ziphites came unto Saul to Gibeah, saying, Doth not David hide himself in the hill of Hakilah, which is before the desert? Then Saul arose and went down to the wilderness of Ziph, having 3,000 chosen men of Israel with him, to seek David in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul encamped in the hill of Hakilah, which is before the desert by the way. But David abode in the wilderness, and he saw that Saul came after him into the wilderness. David therefore sent out spies, and understood that Saul was come of a certainty. And David arose and came to the place where Saul had encamped. And David beheld the place where Saul lay, and Abner the son of Ner, the captain of his host. And Saul lay within the place of the wagons, and the people were encamped round about him.
All right, so we've got Saul camping now in his pursuit of David, who is in the wilderness of Ziph. David knows where Saul is. Saul does not specifically know where David is. Now, picking that thought up in verse 6 through verse 12. 6 through 12. Randy, could you read that for me, please?
6 through 12. Then David said to Ahimelech the Hittite, and to Abishai the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, saying, Who will go down with me to Saul's camp, to Saul in the camp? And Abishai said, I will go down with you. So David and Abishai came to the people by night, and behold, Saul lay sleeping inside the circle of the camp, with his spear striking the ground at his head. And Abner and the people were lying around him. Then Abishai said to David, Today God has delivered your enemy into your hand. Now therefore, please let me strike him with a spear to the ground with one stroke, and I will not strike him the second time. But David said to Abishai, Do not destroy him, for who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and do without guilt? David also said, If the Lord lives, surely the Lord will strike him, or his day will come that he dies, or he will go down into battle and perish. The Lord forbid it that I should stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. But now please take the spear that is in his head and the jug of water and let us go. So David took the spear and the jug of water from beside Saul's head, and they went away. But no one saw or knew it, nor did any awake, for they were all asleep, because the sound of sleep from the Lord had fallen on them.
All right, let's pause and notice some things here. There's no shortage of folks that want to kill Saul on behalf of King David. Abishai says, Let me kill him. Now, can you picture that scene? David and Abishai standing over Saul. And David has already spared Saul's life once, as you'll read back over in chapter 24, verses 6 and 7, on down through about verse 10. Already spared his life. And his reason is, Saul is God's anointed. I'll not kill him. Abishai says, I'll only spear him one time. I'll nail him to the ground, just one time. David said, no. No, not going to be. And his reason is, God will smite him. Do you see that? If there's any vengeance to be taken, it'll not be mine. God will smite him. He'll go in battle or in some way. He'll perish, but it'll not be by my hand. And we note that David took his spear and took his water bottle. Now, the next portion of this, I think, is fascinating when you get down into verses 13 through verse 16. We note that David rebukes Abner. Who's Abner? Some of these characters have become important characters in our study for their relationship to the king. Who's Abner? Son of Ner, but why does that make him important to Saul? He's second in command. He's the captain of Saul's army. And so that makes Abner a very responsible, important fellow.
Mickey, I just wanted to mention, it took me a few minutes to recall the site in Scripture, but back at what you said about the justification for David keeping Bathsheba, on that subject, it was, I think, one of the major arguments made on that, actually, was on Psalms chapter 51 and verse 3.
All right.
Where David, David said to him, "For I know my transgressions, and my sin is ever before me." That, I think, in one particular debate, and I think you know the one I'm referring to, that was a prominent argument used.
Doesn't justify adultery.
Justify adultery.
If it did, it would justify five or six wives.
Right.
That won't wash. We'll talk more about that when we get over to 2 Samuel 11. But that won't wash. Again, in this particular text, the fact that Abner is the captain of Saul's army makes what David says to Abner all the more significant. What was Abner's responsibility as captain of the army? Who was his loyalty to, obviously? To Saul. What would be a primary responsibility? Guard and protect Saul. What's he done?
Failed in his duty.
And David said to Abner, son of Ner, "Answerest thou not, Abner?" Then Abner answered and said, "Who art thou that criest unto the king?" Verse 15, "And David said unto Abner, Art not thou a valiant man, and who is like thee in Israel? Wherefore then hast thou not kept watch over thy lord the king? For there came one of the people in to destroy the king, thy lord. This thing is not good that thou hast done. As Jehovah liveth, you are worthy to die." What is it that Saul now knows that David has done?
Gotten close enough to kill him.
He has his water bottle and he has his spear. And Saul needs to know that, and Abner did not protect him. You'll note in verse 21 of the text, "Then said Saul, I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will no more do thee harm, because my life was precious in thine eyes this day. Behold, I have played the fool, and I have erred exceedingly." Well, does that justify what he's done? Brethren, I want us to see this point clearly. This is not the first time that Saul has said, "I have sinned. What I did was wrong." Just simply saying, "I have sinned," doesn't make everything okay. We've talked about this before. Sometimes just saying, "I'm sorry," doesn't fix the problem. What's Saul's problem?
Pride.
Saying, "I'm sorry," doesn't fix that. He's still arrogant. He's still in pursuit of David's life. I want you to know that David still feels the need to flee from Saul. Saying, "I'm through with this foolishness, I've erred exceedingly," doesn't mean that Saul, given a chance, wouldn't kill David. Do you see that?
Yeah, you still see the evil spirit that has come upon him.
Well, we do, but we see the humility of David's heart when he calls upon Saul to send over some of the young men and pick up your sword or pick up your spear and your water bottle that I've taken. He said, I would not put forth my hand against Jehovah's anointed, verse 23. And then in verse 25, then Saul said to David, blessed be thou my son David, thou shalt both do mightily and shalt surely prevail. So David went his way and Saul returned to his place. What does David do? Pardon me?
Runs to the
Philistines. Why does he do that?
He doesn't trust Saul.
Why he doesn't trust Saul? Does he have any reason not to trust Saul?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. He has all kinds of reasons not to trust Saul. Saul has been in pursuit of his life for some time now. On and off in pursuit of his life. In chapter 27, David flees and goes among the Philistines. Notice again, verses 1 through 4. And David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul, for there is nothing better for me than that I should escape into the land of the Philistines, and Saul will despair of me to seek me any more in all the borders of Israel. So shall I escape out of his hand. Now I want us to look at the map again. These maps are so helpful. We can talk about escape into the land of the Philistines, but look, if you will, we're talking about a rather large area that is occupied by the Philistines. We know there are a lot of them when we look at the estimate of the army. But we find that David goes to Gath once again to hide among the Philistines. And in doing so, you'll note that he takes with him 600 men. That's a big responsibility to impose upon the Philistines, is it not? I'm going to go and I'm going to take 600 people with me. I'm going to live among you. And he lives, or goes unto Achish, the king of Gath, you'll see in verse 2. Well, now wait just a minute. When we go back to the 21st chapter of 1 Samuel, we find that David has pretended to be a madman in the presence of Achish. How is his behavior now? Is he acting like a madman before Achish now?
Not now.
Not now. Pardon me? Kind of acting like a friend. That's interesting. You'll notice that he goes and he takes his two wives, verse 3. And it was told Saul, verse 4, that David was fled to Gath, and he sought no more again for him. And David said unto Achish, if now I have found favor in thine eyes, let them give me a place in one of the cities in the country, that I may dwell there. And what did Achish give him?
Ziklag.
Ziklag, look where that is. Notice it's right on the border, but it's just inside the land of the Philistines. You see that?
But it was a city that was given in the original allocations when the people crossed the Jordan River.
All right.
To the people of Israel.
All right, but who controls it now?
Yeah, the Philistines.
The Philistines do. Yeah. Now, this next paragraph becomes, on down to the end of the chapter, quite interesting to me. When we look at what David's doing, he's far enough away from Gath that David can pretty well do what he wants to if he's thorough. Look at the text. In verse 8. It says, and David and his men went up and made a raid on the Geshurites and the Gerzites and the Amalekites, for those nations were the inhabitants of the land, who were of old as thou goest to Shur, even unto the land of Egypt. Now, question. Who is it that David is fighting against?
The enemies of Israel.
The enemies of Israel. I want you to look at this map. Some of the locations we're uncertain of, but we know that he's fighting against those who are on the southern border the land of Judah. Now, some that maps that you'll refer to put the Geshurites way up here. I don't think that there's any reason to believe that the Geshurites are any others than those that are on the southern portion of the land of Judah. And there's a reason for that. The Philistines, they thought that they had made inroads into Judah, and they had. And these were, no doubt, some who had become allies of the Philistines, enemies of those of Judah, those of Israel, as it were, at this point. Now, as you go back to the text of chapter 27, look carefully. When Achish asked David, "What have you been doing today?" What did David say? Pardon me? Yes, I've been fighting down there among those who are the inhabitants of southern Judah. Was that true?
No.
No, that wasn't true. He's been fighting against those who were south of Judah, those who had become allies, as it were, or at least in part, with the Philistines against the Israelites. What's David doing? Unbeknownst to Achish. Pardon me?
Get rid of his allies.
That's right. David is killing the allies of the Philistines. David is fighting against the enemies of his people. Do you see that? Now, why do you suppose, when you read in the text of verse 9, David smote the land and saved neither man, or saved neither man nor woman alive, and took away the sheep and the oxen and the asses and the camels and the apparel, and he returned and came to Achish. And then Achish says, "What have you been doing today?" He said, "Well, I've been fighting against those in southern Judah." Well, who's going to call him a liar? What's happened to those who might call him a liar? They're all dead. There's not anybody going to tell Achish any different. Those in David's army have fought with and for David against the allies of the Philistines. And so Achish, the king of Gath, he thinks that he's got a real firm ally. Look at what David is doing. He's fighting against the Israelites. No, he isn't. He's fighting against the Philistines. Now, read further in the text. In verse 11, "And David saved neither man nor woman alive to bring them to Gath, saying, lest they should tell of us, saying, so did David, and so hath been his manner, all the while he hath dwelt in the country of the Philistines. And Achish believed David, saying, he hath made his people Israel utterly to abhor him, therefore he shall be my servant forever." What does Achish think he has in David? Oh, he's my best friend. But he wasn't. Now we've got a problem, though. In chapter 28, we find that the Philistines go to fight against the Israelites. Who's the king of the Israelites? Well, Saul is. And Saul's army is now encamped, or the Philistines rather, in Shunem. Look where Saul's army is. They're up here in Gilboa. And the battle is going to take place right here. Which, by the way, a lot of the battles did in the plains of Jezreel. You see that? And we've talked about that before as we've discussed these particular locations on the map. And I put Endor on this map just for fun. So you would know that Paul went, or Paul, I knew I'd do that. So that Saul, king of Israel, when he went from Mount Gilboa to the witch of Endor in the next chapter to find out what it's going to be, you'll see on this map how far he had to travel, really not all that far, to go and find this woman who was a soothsayer, an enchanter, if you please, to see what was going to take place in the battle with the Philistines. But look at where David is. When this battle is about to happen, where is David? Is he down here in Ziklag? No, he's up here. He goes up there with the Philistines. Do you see that? And look at chapter 28 in verse 1. In those days, or it came to pass rather, in those days that the Philistines gathered their hosts together for warfare to fight with Israel. And Achish said unto David, Know thou surely that thou shalt go out with me in the host, thou and thy men. And David said to Achish, Therefore thou shalt know what thy servant will do. And Achish said unto David, Therefore will I make thee keeper of my head forever. What job is David going to have in this battle with Israel? Bodyguard for Achish, king of the Philistines. But David is an Israelite.
It's probably be more accurate to say he's king of Gath.
King of Gath.
It would appear that these Philistines are more city like states. The city-states.
Yeah. Yeah. City-states. That's correct. I would agree with that. City-states. But he's leading this army of the Philistines. Yeah. Against the Israelites. And of course this great battle is taking place here. Point is, David's supposed to take care of King Achish. In this battle. But if you'll drop down in verse 3, Samuel was dead, and all Israel had lamented him and buried him in Ramah, even in his own city. And Saul had put away those that had familiar spirits and the wizards out of the land. However, God's not talking to them. And Saul wants to know how this battle is going to play out. So what does he do? Alright, now that always makes for some interesting discussion in class. Look, if you will, beginning in verse 8. It says that Saul disguised himself and put on other raiment, and went, he and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night, and he said, Divine unto me, I pray thee, by the familiar spirit, and bring me up whomsoever I shall name unto thee. Now, this woman's no dummy. She knows what the rules are. What are the rules?
You do it, you die.
All right, you do it, you die. Who made that decree? Saul, king of Israel, made that decree. Verse 9. And if I do that, I'll die. And verse 10. Saul sware unto her by Jehovah, saying, As Jehovah liveth, there shall no punishment happen to thee for this thing. And the woman said, Whom shall I bring up unto thee? And he said, Bring me up Samuel. When the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice and said, with a loud voice, and the woman spake unto Saul, saying, Why hast thou deceived me? For thou art Saul. Now, I find two or three things rather revealing just here. Number one, perhaps first and foremost, when this woman saw Samuel, what is this woman? She's an enchanter, a witch, as it were, a soothsayer, one who practiced the magical arts. Does she have the ability to raise the dead?
No.
No. Does it appear that she is somewhat surprised that she raised Samuel? When she saw Samuel. It's my personal conviction that she's just as surprised as anybody. That Samuel came forth.
Is that not the Lord's doing?
It was the Lord's doing. Yes, it wasn't her doing. It was the Lord's doing. And what we know just here is not only does she recognize Samuel, but she now recognizes Saul. And she accuses him of deceit. And he said, Be not afraid, for what seest thou? And the woman said to Saul, I see a God coming up out of the earth. And he said unto her, What form is he of? And she said, An old man cometh up, and he is covered with a robe. And Saul perceived that it was Samuel. Now, Saul said to Samuel, I am sore distressed, verse 15. For the Philistines make war against me, and God is departed from me, and answereth me no more, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore I have called thee, that thou mayest make known unto me what I shall do. Now I want you to look at that. We know that Saul has had a problem. Saul has been very troubled from time to time to time. He's called David in the earlier days to play music for him, that his heart might be comforted. And now he's troubled and there is no comfort. And he wants to know from Samuel, what am I to do? And what does Samuel tell him? You're going to die. When are you going to die, Saul? In this battle. That's right. You're going to die in this battle. And this battle is going to take place tomorrow. Look, if you will, please, at verse 17. And Jehovah hath done unto thee as he spake by me. Jehovah hath rent the kingdom out of thy hand and given it to thy neighbor, even to David. Remember back in chapter 13, when Samuel first told David, or first told Saul those words? Verse 18, because thou obeyest not the voice of Jehovah and didst not execute his fierce wrath upon Amalek, therefore hath Jehovah done this thing unto thee this day. Moreover, Jehovah will deliver Israel also with thee into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow thou shalt thou and thy sons be with me. Jehovah will deliver the host of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. Now that would not be good news, would it, if you were Saul? Well, the battle is soon to engage. When you look at chapter 29, we see that the Philistines ready themselves to attack Saul. You'll notice in verse 2 that the lords of the Philistines passed by on by hundreds and by thousands, and David and his men passed on in the rearward with Achish. Now we've got a problem. Where's David? He's with the Philistines. The Philistines are about to attack the Israelites. In reading and studying this, perhaps there are questions that come to mind about David. Go ahead, Joey.
I have a question. At this point, with the consulting of the wish of Endor, how many years has Samuel been dead by this time?
I don't know.
Because I'm wondering, how is it that the wish of Endor recognized Samuel? I find that kind of surprising.
Well, it doesn't. Well, the text tells us that when the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice. Whether she recognized his identity or not might be debated. But Saul, when Samuel is described, he affirms that this is Samuel. Now, how long it has been, that's an interesting question that you would ask that. The timeline in these latter years of Saul's life is not clearly defined for us to know exactly time frame took place between these events. I don't know. But we know that we're in the declining years, of course, of Saul. And in this particular instance, this is the day before Saul dies. Now, how long Samuel has been dead, I don't know. We know that he died back over in chapter 25 when Saul is pursuing David's life.
I guess I always assumed that the witch recognized him. But we don't know that definitively.
Don't know that definitively. No. That might be open for discussion. I don't know that definitively. But I find an interesting question here. It's speculation. I'm going to throw it out just for you to think about. What would David do if the kings of the Philistines had not opposed David's presence with them in this engagement with Israel?
Would have attacked them from the rear.
Maybe so. He's in that position. That's, like I say, speculation. We don't know that for sure because we're not told that. But that's the position that he's in to do that. But we know that he doesn't have to make that choice. In chapter 29, David is not allowed to go with the Philistines to fight against Israel. Why? They're afraid of him. Philistine kings come to Achish, even though Achish has every confidence in David. The Philistine kings say, well, he's an Israelite. And we're afraid of David. He might not be as loyal as you think that he is. So what we want to do is we want David to go back to Ziklag. He just sit this one out.
Interesting, too, that Saul did not directly seek the advice and counsel of God. He went to a deceased prophet, which is... It shows that he has basically deviated from being the kind of man that God wants him to be.
Well, now that's interesting that you would say that. Go back, if you will, to the 28th chapter of 1 Samuel. I think that Saul did seek God, but God wouldn't talk to him. In chapter 28, in verse 5, we didn't read that. It says, when Saul saw the host of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. And when Saul inquired of Jehovah, Jehovah answered him not, neither by dreams, nor by Urim, nor by the prophets. Then said Saul to his servants, seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit. God not talking to them.
Yeah. Well,
and we see why.
Maybe I didn't phrase that quite right, but he's not... He shouldn't have the attitude of, well, if God won't talk to me, I'll get my answer somewhere else. That,
right.
I mean, that's what I'm really trying to say.
Right.
And that's, you know, you seek the counsel of God first, and you get what you get. If God's not talking to you, then, you know, then you basically, you put yourself in that position.
Why didn't Saul just repent?
Yeah. Right.
Why didn't he repent?
That's a great question.
But he's charted this path, and here he goes. And I think it becomes a demonstration of some of the things that we read in Hebrews chapter 6 about those who've been once enlightened and tasted the gift and so forth, and they reach a point where they just don't want to back up, and that's the case here with Saul.
Well, and now it seems to me that if God had stopped talking, then he should have figured out it was going to go badly.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like people today, he kept looking for someone who was going to give him the answer he wanted to hear.
We do that, don't we? Yeah, we do that. You know, if I ask you a question and I don't hear what I want, I'll find somebody to tell me what I want. I'll find somebody to agree.
He inquired of the Lord didn't answer, so he said in sin instead.
Yeah.
Leviticus 19:31. Do not turn to mediums or spirits. Do not seek them out to be defiled by them. I am the Lord your God. And then Leviticus 20:27. Now a man or a woman who is a medium or a spiritist shall surely be put to death. They shall be stoned with stones, their blood guiltiness is upon them.
Well, that's right. Of course, this woman very well understood that. She understood the decree of Saul back in verse 3. He put away those that had familiar spirits out of the land. Makes you wonder how he did that. This was back in the day when things were better. But now, it's not better. And so here we go. So he inquires of this woman, and Samuel tells him, you're going to die in the battle. And this is the first bell, second bell. Oh, okay. Right on the edge of the cliff. All right, we'll pick up chapter 29 next time. I want you to read, if you will, about this battle. Read through the remainder of 1 Samuel. That'll be easy for you. I want you to read on into 1 Samuel, if you will, at least... Read up to chapter 11. Okay?